Hello and welcome back to First Year Jitters, the only show where we love easing your first year shivers more than the experience I would have in Robert Nozick's Experience Machine. And if you ask me, that would be all you can eat burgers. I am your host, Omar Kabej. Oh boy, do we have a treat for you today with our next guest. He is a fourth year student and is a double major. Oh my goodness, yes, two of them. In philosophy and religion / culture, and he plays three instruments, being guitar, bass, and singing. Ladies and gentlemen, may I please welcome Antonio Rodriguez. How you doing, Antonio?
I'm well, everybody. I'm well. How are you, Omar?
I'm doing good. You see, it's actually very unfortunate. I just got this notification since Frozona, we are actually doing this show on Zoom. Our Zoom meeting is about to end in 10 minutes, so... I don't know why it does that. So just letting you know, there will be a slight pause while we get the Zoom meeting back up. Is that all right with you, Antonio?
Yeah, that's peachy.
All right, so we're just going to get through as many questions as we can before we get kicked out by Zoom. So the first question we have here is, what is the first day like for you? When you started a Laurier as a career, tell me about your very first day at Laurier.
I remember... My first day was not very eventful. I remember the day before getting my notebooks in order, kind of getting ready. I still take all my notes by hand physically, so I was, you know, organizing notebooks. And then my first class ever was at 8:30 in the morning. It was an intro women and gender studies class, and it was online. I started university 2020. I graduated high school 2020, so my academic year was cut off by the global pandemic. So my first ever class, I remember rolling out of bed, right into my chair to log on to Zoom for an 8:30 Women and Gender Studies introduction class.
Oh, okay. And so you had the online experience for first year.
Yes, for first year and second year. It wasn't until third year that I fully came on campus.
Interesting. And how was that like being like that online experience? Like, did it feel any different from like high school since you were online, or was there any difference?
I'm particularly social. I was always a social butterfly, and especially in high school, I was involved in everything. So the global pandemic hit me like a rock. I you know, initially it was nice. I was reading books and playing video games and watching movies. But as soon as I realized that I wasn't going back to high school, it just came all crashing down. And you know, I felt it was a kind of difficulty adjusting to everything purely online, socially. Academically, I didn't really struggle at all. My grades were good. But socially, I kind of struggled to create those spaces. But I met people, I met like-minded people in my classes, people that would talk up. Not a lot of people would talk on the Zoom classes. So I got to know some very interesting people, and we'd like hang out and watch movies over Zoom or chat on Discord and play video games. It was very different. It was just so many adjustments.
No, I totally get that, man. Well, thank you for giving us that insight into kind of like that first day. So now I kind of want to ask an interesting question. Since you had your first experience online, what was your first experience like on campus? Tell me that experience.
Okay, I remember... So yeah, I was, I didn't live on my own first year because it was all online. I decided to stay home with my mother, but second year, even though it was still all online, I decided to live on my own. So come third year, I was still living on my own. And my first class of the day was Indigenous and Africana Religions in the Americas at 8:30 in the morning, another 8:30 morning class. They're brutal. And I try not to take them when I can. I wasn't really nervous. I had kind of gotten into the groove of school at that point. You know, I was in my third year. I knew how classes worked. It was a first year course as well, so I wasn't very nervous. But I do remember the day before going to campus with my roommate who had just started his master's. And him and I were basically, despite the fact that I had been at the school for 2 years now, both new to the school. And we were kind of exploring campus together, getting to know where my classes are and where his classes were. It was an interesting experience, but just like my first year, I kind of remember the day before a lot more than the day of. That was the day the queen passed away too. I had two classes that day. It was a pretty chill day. Pretty chill for a step.
All right. Well, thank you very much for that insight. Kind of hear both perspectives. Next question I want to ask you is, since, you know, you said second year was first time you lived on your own. Tell me about that experience of, like, you being, like, on your own, like, away, like, from your parents.
Yeah, so my, you know, I was raised by my mother, and, you know, she was always very relaxed. I never really had a curfew in high school or anything like that. So I wasn't kind of looking to escape for the sake of freedom. I already had a great degree of freedom. But it was certainly interesting. It was really hard adjusting to having my mom do everything for me to now me needing to do everything for myself. It was really nice to have the freedom to kind of just do whatever I wanted to do, to have people over whenever I wanted, to have them over, and to socialize with my roommates. But it was tricky. I had to learn how to cook, how to clean, how to do something as simple as, you know, how to do laundry, you know, how to have like a proper balance with like school and social life, because now I could just go into the living room and talk to my friends, you know, especially after quarantine, that was so new to me. But, you know, eventually I kind of got around on it, got on top of it. And I mean, now I love to cook. So something, you know, learning how to not burn my vegetables turned into a passion for cooking. So I guess that's really nice.
Hey, oh, I feel that, man. I can barely cook right now, man. And I'm realizing, oh man, second year, you're going to have to start buying groceries and I'm going to start making food. I'm like, oh man, I'm going to be spending a lot of time with my mom this summer just learning how to cook, I'm telling you.
Yeah, good call.
All right, so that's good, man. Next question here that I want to ask about, and this is my favorite question I like to ask because I love the perspectives, and that's time management. As a first-year student or any time in university, how has your time management progressed? Like, were any struggles you had with time management? How did you kind of circumvent that? Give me some insight.
Yeah. So as I've gone on in university, I've become more and more busy in first year to kind of, you know, make it feel like I was socializing. I, started the philosophy club back up and we would have monthly meetings over Zoom. And then as time has kind of just gone on, I've assumed more responsibilities. I've worked now as a research assistant for a year, initially in the philosophy department, now in the religion department. I've been an IA since last fall, and for a year I've been working on the campaign to unionize student workers on campus. So third year, my first year in person, I was immediately far more busy than I'd ever been before. And not only was I more busy, but I also had the option to hang out with friends whenever. I could bump into friends on campus. I could go out and take the bus and go see friends. And my time management skills were very poor. I was very frequently kind of taking little hits here and there on grades. Nothing too big. My grades did dip a little bit in between second and third year. It was kind of a needed sacrifice to have a good social life. But, you know, even now in my fourth year, I'm incredibly busy. I work three jobs and I still run the philosophy club. I'm founding an NDP club and I'm founding a religion and culture society. And so time management is something that I do not have mastered at all. But one thing that's really helped me is taking me days. Every so often, maybe a Tuesday or a Sunday or a Thursday, I'll kind of take a day just dedicated to relaxing, not thinking about work, kind of just turning my brain off and playing music or reading a book or watching a movie or something. I just find that it refreshes me and kind of keeps me going for the rest of the week. That's kind of the only aspect of time management I've gotten mastered, the self-care portion, but trying to fit it all in does get really tricky. Doing work, this might not work for everybody, but sometimes doing work during class helps me. I'm not endorsing not paying attention to class, but there have been times where I've caught up on assignments in class and that can be a little helpful, so.
All right, then. No, I totally get that, man. And just before we get kicked off Zoom and I have to restart the meeting again, any just tips for time management that you have for first-year students?
So, yeah, taking me days is the biggest one. Take a day to yourself to just fully relax, decompress, and unplug. That way, you know, when the next day comes or the week starts, like, you're ready to go right back at it. You're stronger than ever.
All right. That's good. So again, for those who don't know, we are about to literally be kicked off Zoom because, I don't have a pro account. So you're gonna have to excuse a couple minutes here just while, look at that. The meeting has just ended. So I'm going to have to, do it again. So, if you're just joining us, here, we just got kicked off Zoom, which is absolutely fantastic. And now what I have to do is I have to schedule another meeting, with, my guest, Antonio Rodriguez. And, I am just going to be doing that. And I will get back here in a few seconds. But again, what Antonio was saying, I think was very important. About time management. I think it is incredibly important just to, you know, kind of take those me days, you know? And I think one thing that's also very important is, you know, it's important to take me days. It really is. But don't try to let those, like, me days, like, overtake, you know, work. Because, you know, the important thing about time management is management. You know, you got to find that balance between, like, the me day and kind of doing the work that you need to do. But again, I think, you know, Antonio, what he was saying is, I think, absolutely true. You know, taking those me days, incredibly important, and I think it's worth doing. Well, looks like welcome back, Antonio. It looks like you've set up the meeting this time, huh?
Yes. I mean, the hosting Philosophy Club virtually the first 2 years of university, I got to know Zoom very well.
That's great. I was just telling the audience here kind of about the importance of those me days you were talking about, but also just kind of don't let the me days take over university. You know, it's important to have them, but, like, don't let them overtake work. Would you agree?
Yes, you definitely. I mean, university is all about, it's all about balance. It's all about balance. The finding the balance between taking care of yourself and doing work is really important. I mean, if you're too focused on taking care of yourself, you're just going to be self-indulgent. And if you're just doing work, your life is going to really suck. So trying to find that middle ground is really important. And that goes for everything as well. You know, I mean, I'm somebody who is very social. I love to socialize. I'm also someone who, you know, I enjoy partying. But trying to find the you know, the sort of moderate, the middle ground, the golden mean, if you will, if we're using Aristotelian terms, the golden mean between you know, the excess and the deficiency. You have to go out, you have to have fun, you gotta do what you gotta do to, you know, make yourself happy, but you can't neglect your work, you can't neglect your duties. So striking that balance is so important, and really it just comes from messing up and reflecting. There's really no other way to develop it. You just gotta screw up and reflect on those screw ups and try to be better.
All right. Well, thank you. That's great advice. And kind of talking on that is, let's talk about evaluations. Now, I know a lot of listeners be like, oh, I don't want to talk about midterms and finals. Well, guess what, people? I don't appreciate them either, but they happen, you know? So I want to ask you, Antonio, what are your study tips for essays, writing assignments? Because you do have philosophy students that could be listening to this, and we do have a writing assignment that's coming up in a couple weeks. So
yes.
Tips on just assignments, essays, tests. What would you say about that?
So I don't have a lot to say in terms of quizzes and tests. In philosophy, they're not very common, although a little bit of tea. Ever since, you know, ChatGPT has become big, departments in the arts are just shuffling everything around, and now tests are becoming way more common than essays. But in terms of essays, one of my biggest pieces of advice, I tell this to my students in tutorial first year, as I go, remember everything you learned in grade 12 English, forget all of that. Grade 12 English sets you up with some pretty poor writing habits. You know, stuff around like the hamburger method of making an essay tends to be a little more complex than that. As well as, you know, like a point, proof, explain. There's no reason why an essay needs to be structured in point, proof, explain. There's, you know, points about rhetorical devices as well, especially in philosophy. Use of flowery language and rhetorical devices is really frowned upon. So I would say, you know, a lot of the habits that you learn in high school English aren't really conducive to the academic writing style you learn in university. So for building up a good writing style, I would say it's like anything else. It's through trial and error. The first couple papers you write might be duds, but you'll get better as time goes on. And I would suggest, you know, kind of trying to write like your textbook in a very clear and matter-of-fact way. Reading your papers out loud, as well as there's a diction function on Word, and that's really good for catching really simple mistakes with commas. You'll kind of like hear the voice awkwardly speak if you're missing a comma or missing a semicolon where it should be. The Writing Center is amazing here. There are a couple of students in the Writing Center who are absolutely brilliant, who are such great helps. I tell everybody, if you're struggling with your writing and you want feedback, the Writing Center. I would also say, you know, pick an author or a writer whose writing you really, really love, and try to just do what they do. Like, I modeled my writing style off of one of my professors. Her name's Dr. Rebecca Johnston. She specializes in ancient Greek philosophy and feminist theory. And I've kind of just tried to tool my writing style to her papers and to how she lectures, and makes it a little easier. You know, it's like having a little inspiration. So those would kind of be my advice. Always start a paper early as well. I've written many papers last minute. I just wrote a 5,000-word first draft of an undergrad thesis in 3 days. It's never worth it. You know, you gotta budget your time, do little by little. And when you finish a paper, give it a day and come back to it the next day. When you have that day break from it, you come back with a far more clear mind. You'll catch those kind of silly grammar mistakes, but you'll also catch other flaws in the writing. So anytime you finish a piece of writing, leave it for a day, come back and edit it.
All right. Well, thank you very much. That's great with essays. Now, what I also really want to ask is, you know, in your university career, you had to do, I'm assuming, like, quizzes, multiple choice tests. What's your opinion on, like, studying? Like, what are your study tips? Like, memorizing, or even beyond that, just like understanding and applying like those concepts?
Yeah, I'm not really great with memorizing. In philosophy, we really don't have any tests and quizzes. In religion and culture, it's a lot more common. And what's helped me is making connections, trying to make connections between theories and theorists and time periods, you know, whatever you're presented with, trying to connect it to other course content. As well as, I find studying with other people to be incredibly helpful when it comes to tests and quizzes. It's kind of just inevitable that other people will have information that you don't have, and that you will have information that other people don't have. So, you know, when you're in a study group, you got everybody's perspective, and, you know, you get something that maybe you missed in the lecture. As well, it's just a fun way to study. And you remember things, you know, maybe you'll be doing the quiz of the test and you'll be like, oh, you know, somebody made a joke about this last night. I remember this. So my approach to quizzes and tests, even though I do have so few, is when I have them, I try to buddy up, study with friends in the class, and connect the concepts, and try to understand them and apply them.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Now we're going to go, thankfully, a bit away from the study tips into something I think that's pretty fun, and that is community. So I want to ask, how did you get involved in the learning community throughout your career, and what tips would you give to first-year students in terms of getting involved?
Yeah, I so my club fair was purely online. Club fair was just all online. I joined two clubs. I joined the Laurier Young Progressives and a club with a very long name, the Laurier Intersectional Political Theory Book Club Society. Not a great name. This is my tip. If you're gonna start a club, don't give it a super long name. But I became involved in the community very organically. Like, I founded the philosophy club, and that brought me a lot of connections. I'm currently founding a NDP club and a religion and culture society. And as well, I've gotten involved in the unionization effort on campus for a year now. The union has been trying to unionize student workers, IAs, RAs, markers, proctors, dons, really any student worker. And I stumbled into these things through things that I love. You know, I love philosophy. I wanted a space to talk philosophy. So I created Philosophy Club. You know, I was passionate about politics, and I've always been passionate about labor politics specifically, and so I got involved with the union. You know, I've enjoyed my time in religion and culture. I wanted to meet more religion and culture majors, so I'm helping to put together a religion and culture club. I would say, you know, if you want to start something, start something. And nothing is too niche or weird. I mean, you know, like, there's... Like, if you want to start, like, a tabletop gaming club. I don't even think we have one at Laurier.
I think we do. Yeah, demand. We do.
You do? Oh, we're that amazing. But if you wanted to start any sort of club, I would say do it. You know, if there's a gap, if there's something that you notice isn't being addressed, absolutely start it. And join clubs. I mean, join clubs and things you're interested in and hobbies you have. Even join clubs and things you want to learn about. You know, in first year and second year, I would sometimes go to, like, sociology students associations meetings or the film students associations meetings. I as time has gone on, I've had less time to go to club meetings. I no longer join clubs now. I run them. It's such a mess. But I would say, you know, just try to find things that you love doing that are going on campus. And there's always something happening on campus. There's always so much. And if there's not something you see that you love, start it up.
Yeah, that's great. I think Philosophy Club is still around, right? So do you want to kind of just mention that to anyone who might be interested after this episode?
Yes, absolutely. I am president of Philosophy Club, and I started it up in 2020 now. It's been a long time. It's a very relaxed club. We kind of just sit around and chat about philosophy. No experience in philosophy is necessary at all. It's a very kind of relaxed thing. So our Instagram is WLU Philosophy Club. We host meetings every other week on Thursdays. So keep your eyes peeled there. We have a Discord link in our bio as well. And also really quick, I'm going to plug the union. If you're interested in the campaign to organize student workers, you can check us out on Instagram. It's Unionize WLU. Nice, simple, and short. Very, very short name for an organization. So yeah, check both out. If you're interested in philosophy and chatting about questions about life and death, what is right and wrong, how do we organize society, come through to Philosophy Club. And if you're interested in labor politics at all, you know, you don't need any experience, check out Unionized WLU.
All right. Now, speaking of philosophy, let's talk about your job as an IA.
Yes.
For those who actually don't know, I just happened to be one of Antonio's students. Oh, yes, yes. It turns out I'm actually one of Antonio's students in his tutorial, which is actually pretty cool. So I just want to go into why did you decide to become an IA, and what is your kind of style of teaching as an IA, like in tutorial, how you communicate with students, and what kind of policies you set for them?
Yeah, I had the option to become an IA in my third year, but I decided to push it off because I got offered a job as an RA. But at the beginning of last term, I was like, you know what? Absolutely. I want to be an IA on top of being an RA. And I love philosophy, and I love teaching. In high school, actually, I took a philosophy class in grade 11, and I had done so well and meshed so well with the teacher that the school actually let me do a co-op in the class for grade 12. So in my grade 12 year, both terms, I was a co-op student in a philosophy class, kind of doing a lot of the work that a TA does, except for marking. So I knew I really liked teaching, and I love philosophy, and kind of that's why I picked it up. Last term and this term, I'm IA in a course, PP110, Values in Society, is the intro philosophy course on ethics and political philosophy. Last term was an absolute blast. The professor teaching it was Dr. Byron Williston, and he specializes in climate ethics. So we did a lot of really interesting things on applied climate ethics. This term, it's Dr. Andrea Mahaly, and so we're doing a lot of really interesting stuff on political philosophy. And it's great. I absolutely love it. As for my teaching philosophy, my approach to the classroom is I want to create a kind of very relaxed vibe. You know, I want my students to feel like I'm approachable and that they can speak up and say what they want. You know, it wasn't too long ago that I was a first year student. I mean, just last year and third year, I still had tutorials in religion. So I remember what it's like. I remember what it's like to be in a tutorial, and nobody likes a tutorial with a tutorial leader who's kind of stuck up. So I wanted to cultivate just kind of very relaxed vibe where students could speak, you know, not be afraid to speak or say the wrong thing. I just wanted an opportunity for students to have fun with the course material that we talk about. I mean, we're dealing with very present, pressing questions and ethics questions about, you know, what is the good life? To what extent do I have obligations towards other people? Is it always wrong to lie? These are questions that we all think about. We think about them in different ways. So giving students the opportunity to talk about them is important. So creating that relaxed environment is big. And as well, bringing some of my personal interests in the tutorial is something that I love. I love, you know, I do a lot of work on philosophy of race and Africana philosophy. And so I like to bring to light some of the historical injustices that philosophers have argued in favor of, and some of the ways in which philosophers have been incredibly discriminatory. When I teach the social contract, for example, specifically Thomas Hobbes, I talk about how the social contract for him, it kind of leaves out women and disabled people, as well as when I teach Kant, I talk about the racist things he has to say about Black people. When I teach Mill, I talk about his arguments for colonization of India. You know, a lot of these philosophers weren't just personally racist, but they oftentimes incorporate the racism into their ideas. So shining a light on that for me is very important. And I find that my goal here is to, you know, I'm not suggesting we stop reading philosophers from the Western canon. My goal here is to kind of just get students to have a more critical reading of some of these, you know, greats of philosophy, to sort of look at just some of the outdated things in their thinking.
That's great. Now, first of all, kind of adding on to that, where would students be able to talk to you? Because you do have office hours, I believe. So you might want to plug that in here?
I mean, if anybody who isn't my student wants to come talk to me in office hours, you absolutely can. I have them here. I host my office hours on Mondays, 1 to 2 in P313. So that's the third floor of Peters, P313. So I guess if you want to come and talk about philosophy with me, absolutely.
Yeah, you also might find me there too, since I kind of come every single week. want to ask, in addition to your teaching philosophy, is now, of course, I really appreciate like the chill atmosphere. That's great. But how do you make sure the students are still like accountable for things? Like, because you were also an IA last year, so how did you kind of apply that back then, and how do you kind of do it now?
One of the hardest things for me to really learn about being an IA is I can't just be the fun guy. You know, the first time I had to mark, I was kind of like, oh, crap, like I got to mark these papers. And some of these students are going to get grades that they might not want. And I was like, oh, I got to kind of toughen up, and I can't just be Mr. Fun. That was kind of really hard to learn. And it's very hard to learn how to say no to students. But I kind of just naturally developed it. And my tutorials have a degree of structure to them. And my kind of thinking is that if we sort of get off topic a little bit, if we deviate from the structure a little bit, as long as it is on topic and it relates, it is okay. Like last term when we were doing climate ethics, we were having a conversation. The topic we were covering was whether or not the environment has intrinsic or extrinsic value. You know, is the environment a value in and of itself, or is it valuable because we get to live in it? And my tutorial, soon we started talking about sports and the philosophy of sport, and we started talking about why is it that we value the sports that we play. It was off topic from climate ethics, but the same general theme of why do we value what we value was, we were talking about it. So I allowed it to happen, and we talked about sport ethics for the entire time. So, you know, the structure is there in case things go awry, but if we deviate from the structure a little bit while keeping the theme, I'll allow it.
Yeah. And something else you pointed out to me in office hours, you had this very interesting idea for a late policy. You mind kind of just explaining that? Just so, I thought it kind of interesting.
Yeah. So last term, the us as IAs, we got to pick our late policy. And my late policy, or this was my extension policy, my extension policy was, you know, I would grant students extensions on any grounds, really, without any doctor's notes or any pleading or anything like that, up till the day before the paper was due. But I said to them, I'm like, if there are a kind of influx of students, you know, asking me for extensions, I'll get rid of the extension policy altogether, and nobody will get extensions for the rest of the term. I thought it was a way of kind of keeping them accountable. You know, I didn't want students kind of stepping all over me and taking advantage of my kindness. So I was like, okay, if I notice this becomes a problem, if too many students are asking for extensions, no students will get extensions.
Did it work for what your goal was?
Well, I mean, I didn't have many issues with students asking for extensions, so it must have worked. I think I probably granted, over the course of three papers, maybe seven, eight, or nine extensions.
Oh, that's not a lot.
yeah, for a 300-person course where I had 50 students, not a lot at all.
Yeah. Now let's get into some humor, if you don't mind. You seem like a pretty funny guy.
I try.
Yeah. What are some funny memories you have of university? It could be first year, because you know it's called first year jitters, but it could also be in your upper years. Just like any funny memories that you want to share with the audience today.
I have a really good one from last term. So the class I was, the tutorial that I was IAing for, my second one, there was a student who was a very funny guy, and he was really enjoying the course, and one day we had a test, and the professor for this course, he kind of looks like Bryan Cranston, who plays Walter White in Breaking Bad. He's tall, he's got the same goatee, kind of similar glasses too. So on the student's test, on his own test, this student had drawn a picture of Walter White and kind of captioned it with, "This is Dr. Williston." And while we were going through, while I was proctoring, so I was kind of going up and down the aisles, you know, making sure people weren't cheating, stuff like that. This student, he called me over to ask me a question about the exam, and I noticed his drawings, and I said, "Oh man, you know, when you're done, hand the test back to me. I'd like to keep those drawings." And the professor ended up seeing the Walter White one. He's like, "Antonio, I'm keeping the Walter White one." And I think he has it up in his office now. And he was telling me, he's like, "Man, even my kids tell me I look like Walter White." and I still have the drawing that the student did of me on the test. It's a really good drawing. Yeah, he drew a bunch of for me. Yeah, every time I handed the attendance sheet out, he would take it last and he would draw. And then I'd cut out the names on the attendance sheet and I'd keep it. Probably one of my funniest experiences. The profs in the philosophy department just have excellent senses of humor. And it was just, it was really funny. As well as I can think of another time. That professor I mentioned whose writing style I not copy, but take inspiration from, Dr. Rebecca Johnston. So she teaches ancient Greek philosophy and feminist philosophy. And, you know, I was, she's undergrad advisor in philosophy, and, you know, your undergrad advisor is who you go to when you have anything to talk about Marx, anything like that. So I was talking to her about my minor in women and gender studies. And I was complaining to her that I received my lowest mark ever in a women and gender studies class of a B-.
Oh no, not the B-.
And I was telling her, and she was like, "Antonio, kind of patriarchal of you to have your lowest mark be in a women and gender studies class." And she's like, "Are you sure you're doing a minor in women and gender studies and not a minor in patriarchy studies?" And it caught me so off guard. I just started dying laughing. I was like, "No, Dr. Johnson, it's not like that. I tried in this class." So the profs, I've had some really funny interactions with professors in the philosophy department, but in, you know, even the students as well. That Walter White story sticks out to me so much. It's the funniest moment on the job, easily.
Yeah. I have a funny story about, I was in your tutorial, I'm not sure you remember. We were, for those who don't know, there's this topic in utilitarianism. We learned about Jeremy Bentham's utilitarianism. And I believe it's called utility points, I believe is what you refer to it as. Basically,
utilitarian calculus.
It's like a bunch of math that you do. So the example that Antonio gave is like, for example, I punch Steve. I'll call him Steve. I punch Steve, right? And I like, I think he loses 7 utility points and I gain 2 utility points. And because he loses more than I gain, then it's a bad decision. You know what I mean? So then Antonio, this funny guy, puts up this picture with the caption of, it was something about a party. Would you mind just elaborating on that? I think you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. So it was a guy at a party with a calculator, and the caption to the meme was, when you ask a utilitarian if the party is good. And I think about that every time I throw a party. I have a roommate who's a utilitarian. But I mean, it's actually another part of my teaching style is I try to bring humor into it. Sometimes I'll sneak a meme into the slides. If you can laugh at something, you understand it. You know, if you laugh at something, if you get a joke, there's a level of understanding there. So, I'm glad you found it funny, Omar. You're clearly picking up the class content.
No, seriously. Anytime now I'm going to go to a social gathering, I'm tempted just to bring a notebook, and I'm just going to start writing down, all these point values. It's like, Omar, what are you doing? Yeah. Like, I'm calculating the utility of this gathering.
Exactly.
So, yeah, this sounds like some Dungeons & Dragons type thing, where it's like, oh, roll d20 to figure out the utility of this party. Oh, yeah, you got a critical fail? Okay, lose 7 utility points.
You know, I think there are plenty of philosophers who would have been absolutely amazing at being DMs, and I think Bentham is one of them. He would have been an excellent DM.
Yes. Speaking of philosophy, I'm going to ask the one question I always wanted to ask you in particular. Yes. Who's your favorite and least favorite philosopher, and why?
Okay, that's very hard to answer.
Any philosophers that you don't, let's start with what you don't like. Philosophy topics that you just don't like or can't stand.
There are a couple of names that come to mind, but one of them is Plato.
Really? I'm actually kind of surprised.
I quite love Aristotle. Aristotle's been a big influence on my ethics. I'm a virtue ethicist, and I take a lot of cues from him. And I find that, you know, Plato's ethics and his understanding that, you know, good life is sort of a life of knowledge, really rely on a faulty metaphysics, his idea of the world of forms. I find to be very untenable. This idea of a sort of perfect realm that really exists as opposed to our sort of reality as it appears. I find that it just kind of has some, you know, not only is it untenable, but kind of has some negative consequences. I think it has the unintended consequence of getting us to focus more on an ideal life than the life that we currently have. And this is a critique that I didn't come up with. This is a critique that comes from Friedrich Nietzsche. I think Plato in his philosophy requires us to think more about this perfect world than to think about the world as it is and the world as it appears. And I take problem with that. So he's definitely one of my one of the philosophers I disagree with most. He started philosophy in the Western world. We wouldn't have Western philosophy without him. But I definitely disagree with him. Favorites is really hard to pin down. There are a couple I really love. Recently, for the past about 7 or 8 months, I've been really into the work of Frantz Fanon. Frantz Fanon was a philosopher from the island of Martinique, and he did his work on colonization and sort of, it was really revolutionary work for the time, but one of the biggest kind of parts of his work is this idea that colonization isn't just about land and resources, but it's about identity, and it's about making the colonized believe they're inferior to sustain colonization. And his work has kind of just really, really blown my mind. And I'm writing my undergrad thesis on him, I'll probably end up doing grad work on him. He's one of the foremost Africana philosophers. I would say I go between having favorites, but he is probably my favorite right now.
All right, that's fair.
Aristotle as well is great. I love Karl Marx and Frederick Engels. Simone de Beauvoir is excellent. Can probably name even more. Angela Davis. It's a hard question.
Yeah, no, totally it is. And I don't know if anyone here listening to this show in the not too distant future is interested in philosophy. Well, look, Antonio's given you a few really good recommendations for people to look at. So next question here. I want to circle back to your first-year experience, because obviously this show is about first years, first-year jitters. Mm-hmm. That's the main thing we're going for. But, of course, anyone can listen to it. But in the topic of first years, going into university, were any, like, worries that you had? Like, any fears of first year that either subsided when you kind of entered first year?
Yeah, I remember struggling in English class in grade 12 English. I was taking it during second term, so it was cut off. It was cut off during quarantine. But I remember taking that class and just every single week was a struggle and thinking, oh my gosh, if I can't do this, how am I going to do university? And then immediately I got to university and it was just a whole different ball game. In terms of writing, and I felt it was easier than what we were doing in high school in terms of writing. That was probably my biggest worry coming in. I was really excited for the social aspect of university. I had a feeling I was going to really gel with it. You know, I have some very particular interests, and I'm very passionate about my interests, and that kind of thing isn't really looked proudly upon in high school. And so I was really excited to enter university. I had friends who were already in university and were telling me, like, oh, Antonio, you know, like, being passionate is cool. And I mean, now that I'm in university, that's kind of how I see it too. You know, whenever I meet people in class and there's somebody who's particularly passionate, I'm always like, oh man, like, I got to be friends with this person. The part about academics was the scariest, but I found my transition to be relatively easy.
That's interesting. Next, I want to talk about, you kind of already mentioned this, but one of the things we like to stress on the show a lot is mental health. Mental health, I think, is very important. You mentioned those me days. Just want to explain, like, what does that exactly do for you when you have those me days? Like, how does that really help you?
Yeah, so for me, they help me recharge. School, having friends, you know, having projects can be really, really mentally draining. And, you know, you can't go 100% 24/7. And there are some days where you just need to take it easy to fully recharge mentally and physically. Sometimes you'll feel all right physically, but sometimes you need that break mentally. You know, or you know, it's that that's the really tricky one is, you know, it's like I feel great, but I just don't want to do the work. It typically means that you're mentally burnt out. But I find that the me days just allow me to recharge. As for general mental health tips, I would say surrounding yourself with people who care about you. You know, it's one of the hardest things I've had to learn about being an adult is that you really can't save people. You really can't help them either. You can be there for them and care about them and provide them support. But if somebody doesn't want help, you can't force them to help themselves. But surrounding yourself with people who care about you and can provide support for you, you know, be it hearing about your problems, providing you advice, or just providing you a distraction. Surrounding yourself with people that care about you is really big. Setting boundaries, taking breaks. I am somebody who has a tendency to bite off more than they can chew. Like I said, I'm working three jobs. I am horrible at saying no. Learning to say no to things. You know, sometimes a friend or, you know, a professor will approach you about something, requesting something, and you just got to be comfortable saying no. So boundaries, finding people, you know, finding that kind of group, finding where you belong. And I would say self-reflection is always good too. You know, you want to be able to think about where you are and if you're on the right path and if you're going the right speed. But don't get into your own head about self-reflection. Don't get caught up in a game of comparison. I find that's pretty detrimental to your mental health is, you know, if you start comparing yourself to people around you, what's really lovely about this age, you know, from 19 to your early to mid 20s is everybody's at different stages. You know, I'm 21. I have friends who have children and I have friends that still need to ask their parents to go out. Everybody's at different stages. Everybody's doing their own thing. Nobody moves at the same pace. So, you know, yes, keep, you know, do the self-reflection, but don't get caught up in your own head. Don't compare yourself to other people. Compare yourself to where you were a year ago. You know, I often think, am I even just a little better than I was last year? If so, yes, then I've made some progress. Okay. Compete with yourself, not other people.
Oh. Oh boy. Oh, you are very smart because you literally just answered the question I was about to ask you. So now I'm going to ask you a question and you just touched on it. So congratulations, Antonio. Well done. let's just say hypothetically you had a time machine. I usually like to use the TARDIS as an example, or you can use the DeLorean, any time machine you can think of from popular culture. And if you could talk to your first year self now, what would you say to them?
Enjoy the moment. You know, don't get too caught up in grades. You know, first and second year are really important for building up healthy habits. But in the long term, when it comes to things like graduate applications, they're not as important as your third and fourth year. And so I would tell my first year self to just take it a little more easy, go a little easier on myself, and have more fun. You know, it's I think about that quote from Ferris Bueller's Day Off. You know, life moves pretty fast, so sometimes you just gotta sit around and smell the roses, because before you know it, it'll all be over. And that was something that really resonated. I first watched that movie when I was like maybe 13 or 14 years old. It always really resonated with me. So I tell myself to stop and smell the roses. Although I would also tell myself that I should take more time to do the things I love. Now that I'm in third and fourth year, I haven't been playing music as much as I used to or reading comics as much as I used to. So I would say, you know, take more time to yourself and more time to relax, but also take more time to do the things you love.
I think that's completely fair. And speaking of movies, just one, I guess, kind of the second last thing here before we wrap up. We actually had one of the most interesting conversations right before we came online, and that is about Kung Fu Panda. You talked about how Kung Fu Panda was a good philosophical movie. You want to just quickly reiterate that for those at home?
Yes, absolutely. So the way I read Kung Fu Panda is about being a conflict between Taoist and Confucian values. Taoism and Confucianism were two schools of philosophy in ancient China. Confucianism kind of, you know, puts a lot of emphasis on uniformity, family values, the kind of importance of ritual and structure. Taoism focuses a lot more on kind of the beauty and the mundane aspects of life, taking things as they come, accepting things for as they are, and even this concept of going with the flow. Like Tao means way. So the way I see Kung Fu Panda is it's a conflict between these two schools of thought, where the Master Shifu, who's trying to fit Po into this sort of, you know, mold of what he thinks a dragon warrior is, represents the kind of Confucian way of doing things, of structure and order and ritual. Po needs to do X, Y, and Z to be the dragon warrior. But then I think about Master Oogway as sort of representing Taoism, and his whole thing is, you know, you can't get an apple from a peach tree. You got to accept Po for who he is, for what he is. And, you know, Po doesn't believe in himself when he's being taught by Master Shifu. But when Po really thinks and starts to accept himself, he starts to improve. And he's, you know, and even when Master Shifu starts to teach him in a way that's suited to him, Po does well.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful message. I think it's all about learning about what makes you unique in doing things your way.
All right. You hear that? Anyone who likes movies and philosophy, watch Kung Fu Panda. In fact, watch Kung Fu Panda 4, which is coming out, I think, this weekend. Yeah, so just go do it.
We're not on the DreamWorks payroll.
Before we wrap up, just any final thoughts you want to say to first year, just kind of like summing up some points that you kind of want the audience to take away?
Yes, actually, I do have one more piece of advice. Go to your professor's office hours. In first year, I would go to my prof's office hours, and I talked to them about the research and what they were doing, and I made excellent connections with professors. I mean, I think the reason I've been a research assistant on two different projects is because I've spoken to professors. The two professors I've worked with, I would go to their office hours regularly to speak to them about their research. It also gives you an idea of the field, and you get to know the professor as a person. You know, I mean, these people, they're people. They're normal, regular people. So go to their office hours, ask questions, and don't be afraid. Don't be afraid to go to office hours and ask questions. You know, professors want you to do these things. And that's the biggest piece of advice I can give to any first-year student is go to office hours. Go to your TA's office hours, too. We're really bored. Getting paid to sit in a room and look at a wall for an hour and get a little dry. So go see them as well.
Yeah. Well, I would like to thank you very much for taking the time out of your day to come here on the show. It's a great honor to have the first, I think you are the first IA I had on the show. So thank you very much.
Thank you. It was an honor as well, Omar. I really appreciate it.
All right. And everyone, please stay safe and enjoy the day. And we'll see you next time.